Well, good morning again. Gosh, I can't tell you how good it feels to have you back. I mean, this really feels like old times, doesn't it? Yeah. The energy is so good when you are here. So thank you for being here. And it's a good sign, isn't it? We are reemerging, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that today. So it seemed like a good time to talk about peace. You think so? Yeah. And we know that we can create a peaceful world by having a peaceful mind. And the world we create around us, the life that we create that is more peaceful, also causes us to have a more peaceful mind. So it works both ways. So this series, Peaceful Mind, Peaceful World, begins today in 8 parts. It's set in the midst of the Season for Nonviolence. This is the 25th annual Season for Nonviolence. And if you're not familiar with that, it is a demarcation and honoring of Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. as two amazing spiritual teachers, especially of the teachings of nonviolence. And it marks the anniversary of the assassination of Mahatma Gandhi on January 30th, and the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. on April 4th. Sadly, the teachers of nonviolence lives were taken in violence, but we keep getting better. We keep evolving. We may not think so, but it's true. There is an ongoing spiritual awakening of humanity, and we're kind of looking at that today, that wave and that process. The Season for Nonviolence was started by Arun Gandhi, who is the grandson of Mahatma Gandhi, and also he started that in partnership with the Association of Global New Thought, which is Unity is a part of that as well. So the whole focus of this season is about raising awareness of the principles of nonviolence. So nonviolent communication, compassionate communication. We have a practice group on Monday nights that Carolyn co-facilitates. Fabulous work, so I really encourage you maybe to steep in that during this time amongst some of our other meditative offerings. So today I'd like to bring us back as we look at this idea of beginning a peaceful mind, peaceful world, turning to that once again. I want to take us back to a story, a mere 4,000 years ago that occurred and is still, I think, relevant for our lives. We'll see. We'll see what you think. Scholars say that this story actually probably has even earlier roots before we this story that we know that I'll tell you about in a moment, that probably Middle Eastern roots, maybe something like the Babylonian epic of Gilgamesh is kind of similar. There's other similar stories, but that's the one they say probably aligns the most. So here's what was happening at that time. It's called, by the way, Noah's Ark. I think it was mentioned earlier. So the population on the earth was increasing really quickly at that time, and there was turbulence, and there was violence, and so there was, you know, just kind of a little bit of an issue happening that God was seeing. And God said, well, you know, it seems like the inclination of the human heart, the thoughts of the human heart, is inclined, essentially not so much bending toward the divine, but away from it, right? And so God was very troubled by this, right? It says in the scripture, this is from Genesis 6 through 9, that God's heart was very troubled, and God even began to regret creating humankind. Now, keep in mind that humankind was just created 6 chapters ago. So, hasn't been very long, and there's already trouble, you know. And so God said, you know, I don't know. I think I'm going to scratch that and start over. So he decided that, or she, or it, decided that that's what was going to happen. And so there was this very righteous man, Noah, who walked in faith with God. And Noah had a wife, and Noah had 3 sons, and his 3 sons had wives, and so God had the divine idea, I could save them, and we could start over with them. I don't have to start over from the very, very beginning. I'll start out with the part of my creation that seems to be getting it. And I'm going to take, some of the animals too. So animals have done nothing wrong. So the birds and the four-leggeds and the ones that slither along the ground, and we'll bring them all back into life after I wipe out the rest of them, essentially. So God told Noah, "I'm going to put an end to all people on the earth because of the violence that is caused by them," essentially. "So make yourself," he says to Noah, "an ark of cypress wood, and use pitch on the inside and the outside so it can be sealed. And then I'll tell you exactly how to build it." And then there goes this very detailed, like how many cubits and how many, all the measurements and exactly what it's supposed to look like. And it's supposed to have three levels, a lower deck, a mid deck, and an upper deck. Metaphysically, we understand that to be the three levels of the conscious mind. There's a subconscious mind, that's kind of the dreamtime mind, the sort of, the core beliefs that live there that are sometimes running the show. There's the conscious mind, the one where we are, here today, we know, there I see my hands, I feel the earth, I'm talking to Carl, whatever it is that is we are aware of in the conscious realm. And then there's the superconscious mind. That's the opening up to the divine ideas and the possibilities. That's the God mind that we are also a part of. So all these layers are there in this ark, and a very specific specifications, which Noah, of course, follows and makes an ark just like that. And then God said, "I'm going to bring floodwaters to the earth to destroy all life under the heavens, every creature that has the breath of life in it, but I will establish my covenant with you, Noah, and your family, and with your sons and their wives and your wife, and also I instruct you now to bring forth a male and female of all the creatures upon the earth." I mean, these were no small tasks, right, for Noah. But Noah was 600 years old, by the way, too, when he was doing all this. So there are no excuses about age. So they all come in, and then God says, and take the amount of food that you need for yourselves, for the people and all the animals, so that you can keep everybody alive. Now, Noah doesn't know how long this is going to go on, so he's got a plan, right? So there's also the planning of the storage of food. So after 7 days, the floodwaters came to earth, and rain fell upon the earth for 40 days and 40 nights. And the ark, in that watertight ark, all the 2x2 animals and the family of Noah were kept safe. And they kept rising with the rising of the waters. So the waters rose up above the trees, and the waters rose up above the highest mountains. They rose up, if you can imagine, above Mount Diablo. Yeah, and there was the ark floating around, maybe right around this area. Who knows? No, probably more Middle East, but anyway. And so as this happened, we know that the amount of time that 7 days before the floodwaters happen, and then the 40 days and 40 nights, there's Hebrew numerology that says 7 is physical completion and 40 is as long as it takes. You'll find those numbers a lot in the Bible, so you can always remember, so 7 signifies there's some kind of physical completion going on, and 40 is just sort of a number that says whatever, whatever it takes to get the job done. So that's basically what we're working with here. And then, what happens after the 40 days, and you can imagine, we don't really know what happened inside the ark during those 40 days, except there was lots of turbulence, there were crazy storms, and they were probably very grateful that they had this refuge and that they were safe and the water didn't come in, right? So there was also instructions given for, a little window, a door. And so after 40 days, it seems like things are sort of quiet out there. So Noah opens up the window. He lets go of a raven, and we know ravens have their own mind, so the raven just sort of flies around and doesn't really come back. But then he decides, "I'm going to let go of a dove." And so he lets go of a dove, and the dove flies all over, but the dove can't find a place to perch. Which lets Noah know, there's not even a branch sticking out or a rock sticking out from this water yet. It's not time. So he closes the window, lets the dove back in, 7 more days, right? Another cycle of physical completion. After 7 days, he opens the window again, he lets the dove out. The dove flies all day long, and it comes back in the evening with one of these. Anybody recognize that? An olive branch, right? The symbols of peace, the dove and the olive branch, return. And really it was, it says that the dove plucked a single leaf of an olive branch, but I think we've extended that to the olive branch. So there's these symbols now of peace. There's peace in the land. The turbulence is over. The release is over. And now it's time to reemerge. So Noah has this sense that soon we will go forth. And so they do in time. And then immediately, the first thing that Noah does once they're on solid ground is builds an altar to give thanks for the safety and the peace for his family and all the animals and the new beginning. So God then blesses Noah and says, I have given you everything now. And then God does something really important. God reminds the people, Noah and the family, that they are made in the image and the likeness of God. So we're starting over, and God is now saying, so we've changed, something's changed, something significant has changed in our relationship with God. Remember back in the Garden of Eden when Adam and Eve were sort of, you know, privy or you know, beholden to this God that was, you know, kind of the superhuman, right? That's going to save the day or punish us. And it seems now in this story, we're getting the message that those days are over. God is saying, I made you in my image and likeness. You have everything you need now. And so this idea of the superhero coming in to save the day or wipe everything out and start over, it's not happening anymore. And God goes on to be clear that, you know, there's a sense of you've got free will. You've got the opportunity to choose now. Specifically, God says that blood will not be shed only from human to human. So it's up, you know, if there's going to be violence again, it's going to be yours. It's going to be on you. And it's also on you to fix it. It's also on you to be the bringers of peace. And so quite a bit of responsibility suddenly comes, right? An ability for us to respond. Then God seals the deal with a covenant and says, never again will I destroy all the earth with a flood. The sign of the covenant I am making with you and all life on earth for all generations to come is the rainbow. And so, you know, when we see that rainbow, we always associate it with, there's always a sense of joy, right? And surprise and delight and wonder and hope and possibility, a sense of prosperity if you go chasing it for the gold at the end of the rainbow. And that's all a part of that energy. There's a sense of peace. There's a sense of possibility. There's dreams that can be made. That's that reemergence, that new life, that new possibility. So let the rainbow be a sign for us, you know, of who we are and the gift that we've been given of free will and the possibilities that are before us. And so that's the end of the Noah's Ark story, but it's only the beginning. It's a restart. So how is this ancient story relevant to our lives today? Well, having mostly reemerged from a pandemic over the last 2 years, it feels kind of similar. You know that there has been this sense of we have to take refuge and we have to sort of batten down the hatches. And there's also a sense that there's been a bit of turbulence in our everyday lives that we've had to endure. And now, doesn't it feel like we've released some stuff and we are reemerging? I mean, today even feels, in this room, feels like another level of reemergence, a sense of new hope, new possibility. That rainbow kind of sense, a reminder again of our covenant and who we are and what gifts we have been given and how we can make a difference in the kind of peace that we want to experience in the world. So I think that Noah's story shows us a way through to peace and a way through to prosperous new beginnings. I see it in four R's. The first one is rest, then recognize, release, and reemerge. But let's take it one at a time. Noah's name actually means rest. It also means calm and peace. So Noah himself, his whole story is about that, is about embodying peace, taking rest, finding that sense of calm, and being that sense of calm. And the ark represents a creation of taking of something that helps us take refuge. So that might be, if you think about, where do you take refuge? Where do you kind of refill yourself? You know, is it, do you have, maybe you have a special chair in your home, or maybe you've even built an altar like Noah did to give thanks, to remind you of the divine. Maybe you have special objects, nature objects, or things that remind you of reflections of the divine. So whatever it is, maybe there's a place in nature, a special grove of trees, or there, that's your refuge. That, and if you haven't created an ark, your own kind of refuge, maybe consider that. Where do I go to sort of refill my power spot, my comfort spot? Whenever I do a house blessing, I always ask people, where's your power spot in your home? And they always know. Like, even though that's not normal language, right? We don't usually walk into somebody's home and say, hey, where's your power spot? They go, oh, this is where I plug in my devices, right? But that's not what we mean. We mean, where is the place that you go that sort of, that that's my place. That's my refill place. That's my place where I maybe look out in a beautiful view, or whatever it is that is true for you. So recognizing that, then when you create that place, that sacred place, it is a place to go and rest. It might be a place to literally sleep, or it might be a place just to relax. It may be the place where you meditate or you pray. It might be a place where you do some movement or write, whatever it is that refills you. So creating that space, or you could also consider creating refuge, carving out that time of day, that space for yourself in your day when you do that. Wherever it may be. It may not be so connected to place, but it might just be space in terms of time. So all of this is a possibility for us. And even when the storm is raging outside, then we can establish that sense of peace in us by taking refuge in the ark that we have created for ourselves, perhaps even the altar we have built for ourselves. That rest contains the golden gift of silence in some way, shape, or form, in whatever it is that we are doing or being in that space. You might even consider having a Sabbath, a day of the week or a part of a day of a week where you, very much like a traditional Jewish Sabbath, you light a candle, begin your time with a blessing, unplug from all the devices and the TV, and have time with your family or alone or with friends. Maybe have meal and conversation, enjoy cooking or reading poetry or reading stories to each other, or building a fire, or going for a nature walk, or, you know, just having that kind of restful time where we reconnect with spirit, with each other, with the truth of who we are. Brenly and I have attempted a little bit of Sabbath. We haven't really stayed quite with it consistently, because of different life circumstances. But we started that for a while on Sunday afternoons, and we have a special candle we light. And it's really lovely to have a time when we just go, yep, TV's not going to be on, phones are down, and we're just going to be together and together with the divine. It's very restoring, which is the whole idea of Sabbath, right? Even God needed a day of rest when creating the world, right? We have 6 days of creation and a day of rest, really clear. So if God needs a day of rest, we need a day of rest too. At least one, right? So make it your Sabbath. If this idea appeals to you, make it whatever feels true for you. Make it your time, your Sabbath, your space each week. And so finally, we can when we do these things, when we do these restful kinds of things, what we are doing is establishing that conscious connection, that unbroken conscious connection with the divine in us and all around us. And it allows us to stay plugged into that and aligned with that. So life just flows and everything feels more peaceful. Our minds, our hearts, our lives, our relationships, our world. So the second R is to recognize. Now in the story, you know, God recognized that there was an issue. God recognized that there was turbulence, that the people were lost, that there was too much violence, and something had to change. So there might be that kind of recognition. There might be the recognition, remembrance of ourselves as divine, but also there might be this sense of, yeah, some things need to change here. There is an inclination of the thoughts of my heart that aren't really aligned with where I want to be. And so what needs to go? And we can use that Marie Kondo style with what needs to go. It doesn't have to be a physical object, right? If you're familiar with her, so Marie Kondo says you pick it up, whatever it is that you're going to, and if you're going to release it, you give thanks for how it served you and you let it go. The same thing can be true of our own behaviors, our own thought patterns, our own, you know, sense of habitual ways of being that we feel like, you know, that's not serving me anymore. And so we give thanks for it. It served me, and now I can let it go. Or we pick something up, a thought, an idea, a way of being, a physical object, and we say, wow, that really sparks joy. I'm keeping that. And we allow that then to be a part of us, that we bring that with us each day. And so in that recognition then, there's also the recognition that we are in charge of our destiny, that we are co-creators of our own destiny, that there is a lot of recognition of the fact that we have free will, that we have choices that we can make. And there's also a sense that we've been given this gift of choosing peace. So we could choose peace over anything else. In the midst of an argument, somebody says something to you that's hurtful. In that moment, even, with just a breath, pause, you can shift everything and choose peace. Choose your peaceful response. Choose your peaceful way of being inside. So like God in the story, as God is pointing out to us in the story of Noah and Noah's family and the descendants of all of us who come after, is the sense of your ability to respond, to be responsible for the kind of world from now on that happens, and to take responsibility wherever you can. When we are in this R stage of recognition, we recognize what needs to be healed, what needs to be let go, and what needs to be kept. And in the releasing process, that brings us to the third R, that is when the rains come, right? That's when the tears come that can cleanse and release and allow. I've often been told by other people and experienced myself a fear of beginning to cry because you're afraid it will never end. Anybody ever have that experience where you might be in a lot of grief and you think, oh my goodness, if I let the dam break, it's just going to overtake me. It's going to be like the great flood of Noah's Ark. And I'm not sure yet if I have the Ark. So there's that sense, right? There's that fear. And then we distract ourselves. And we kind of cover it up. And there's lots to distract ourselves with in the world. And the world around you will be happy for you not to grieve. So you got lots of support not to go there. Oh, it'll be okay, you know. Look on the bright side. And so there's this sense of, and we can get caught up in that in our New Thought teachings, that we think, oh, there's no space for me to feel the grief that I feel or the disappointment or the sadness I feel. But it's so important that we do. Because pain and joy are the same side of the same coin, are two sides of the same coin. And so if we don't feel the pain, we'll never experience the fullness of our joy or the fullness of the peace that is available to us. And so the grieving is really important. We've been through a lot in the last couple years as a collective humanity. And when that happens collectively, there's sort of a collective blanket that you can feel, right? When you tune into it intentionally, it's like, oh, wow, there's a lot of grief here. There's a lot to be felt here. It's not that we have to get swallowed up in it, but allow ourselves to really feel what's here will allow us to really move through and reemerge in a whole new way. So part of the release stage is that, is grieving whatever needs to be grieved. as well as letting go of whatever habits, thoughts, or otherwise things that might be holding us back. So then we can heal and start over. Noah's Ark is a dramatic story of release, kind of purposefully. So there are times in our life where it's like, I am wiping the decks clean, right? And that, like, all aspects of life, we're kind of starting over. Not very often in our lives, and maybe never in your individual life will that happen, but for some of us, that does come. And so that's a part of recognizing the importance to have that ark, that place of refuge, that practice that can keep us steady, but also to feel what is true and release it. So reemerge is the fourth. So we've been through rest and we've been through recognition and release, and then we reemerge. And I think a lot of us collectively anyway are kind of in that reemergence space. It's been a little slow go with COVID. It's kind of like, oh, dip our toes in. Oh, nope, not quite. You know, back, forward, back. But now it's like, yeah, we just seem like we're on that precipice of coming back out and reemerging into what? Like, we've come out of the ark, right? We've just come out of the ark. We're on solid ground now. There's the dove and the olive branch. There's a sign of peace. What will we do now as we reemerge? When we've cried the tears that need to be cried, and we've decluttered the stuff that needs to go, and we've given up the old habits, and those new supportive spiritual practices are in place, what now? What wants to be born in us? What wants to come next for us? There's a sense of having a brand new sense of destination. And when we open the door to our ark and we reemerge, there is a sunshine and there is a rainbow and there is a sense of possibilities. That rainbow reminds us that we're divine beings with endless possibilities that we can co-create by choice. And then we can remember too, the Spirit has made a covenant with us, and that the storms will never completely abolish us again. That we, when the storms come, that we can take refuge, that we have a place of refuge, that we've established that for ourselves. So how will you walk in peace as this ancestor Noah did, this man whose name means calm and peace and rest? How will you embody those ideas? We will each do it in our own unique way because we're unique souls. So finding what is true for you to be the peace, to feel the peace, to establish a peaceful mind, and then to express that out in the world, to bring that forth out in the world, what will be your way, your walk of peace? Peaceful minds create peaceful worlds, so we start there. And we'll follow Noah's four steps, and I'll bring them back up just so you can remember once again, to rest, to create your place and your time of refuge, to recognize that you are divine and what needs to be released to embody that truth, then leads us into release, releasing our limiting thought patterns, grieving whatever we need to grieve, and finally, re-emerging into a peaceful world and a peaceful life. I rest, recognize, release, and re-emerge in peace. Let's say it together. I rest, recognize, release, and re-emerge in peace. So it is.